My name is Patrick Ferris. I was in Vietnam in 1968 and 1969 in an Air Force base called Phan Rang, roughly 200 miles north of Saigon, right on the coast. And it was a very large Air Force base. We had two 10,000-foot runways. Of course, there was no air conditioning. We lived in two-story old wooden barracks that were unfinished on the interior, so everything was just bare wood. And we had bunks, and we were separated by lockers, and that basically were how we lived. I really had no idea what to expect. Fortunately for me, I had been in the Air Force already 6 years, where most of the guys went over there, they were right out of high school. So I was already in the military 6 years. I saw a lot of things and did a lot of things that these young men didn't see or do. And they went from high school or a year or so out of high school right smack into a war zone. And I had a fairly good idea what to expect, but it still was culture shock when I got there with the things that were happening, being mortared and rocketed. And just, you know, I had a wife and a year-old daughter, so it was not where I wanted to be, but you make the best of it, I guess. My position in Vietnam was to repair aircraft. We had a bunch of older aircraft over there where I was. There were old F-100 fighters and B-57 bombers. Technologically, they weren't really up to date like things today are. But we repaired the aircraft, radios and navigation systems, and we had to take the black boxes back into the shops and repair the black boxes. But we were all like on backup to be on the perimeter if we had to, and I spent a couple of nights on the perimeter, you know, guarding the base and that sort of thing. But primarily, I was there to repair airplanes. I was in one firefight, and that was definitely a shock to me, but that was my biggest fear of the nights I was on the, you know, on the perimeter. What happened was I had a marksmanship ribbon from Dover, and then when I went to Vietnam, we were getting mortared every 3 or 4 days, you know, rocketed and mortared at night. They were expecting a big raid on our base one night, so they took the people who had marksmanship ribbons out of our regular job and put us back out and retrained us on the M16s and the machine guns and the grenades and everything else we had to use, and then we were like a backup force with a regular perimeter force. I had my M16, which was a regular rifle we had back in the Vietnam War. And we were in towers. We stayed at one location all night. There were two of us in each tower, and there was a M16 machine gun in a tower. We had grenades in the tower with us, and we also have things called Claymore mines. There was barbed wire out in front of our towers, and there were like looked like little old-fashioned Polaroid cameras. And they had a device in a tower that if the Vietnam Cong would come into our barbed wire fence, we could squeeze the trigger, and it would blow these mines off towards them. So that was called a Claymore mine. And we took 3 meals and sea rations out there with us at night, too. When I wasn't working night shift, we'd have dinner. I'd write my wife a letter normally, and then I would take a shower and then have a couple beers and put my flak vest on and go to bed. And if we were worried about getting hit, a mortar attack, I'd put my flak vest on and we'd get down into the bunker, and we'd spend the night in the bunker sleeping. It was funny because we had the Army on our base, and they would fire cannons out all night long, you know, howitzers, and they'd fire them all night long, harassment fire into the hills behind us. And they would make a booming noise, then a swish after the shell went out. And so you hear boom, swish. But when we got mortared or rocketed, you'd hear a swish, boom, just the opposite. So you learned you could be in a deep sleep. And after I was there 2 or 3 months, I'd learned whether it was a boom, swish, or a swish, boom. And whether it was a swish, boom, you're out of bed and headed for the bunker as fast as you can. My first day, I just felt totally, completely trapped. Because here I am, living in Biloxi, Mississippi with a wife and a year-old daughter. We're a quarter mile from the beach. I was teaching 6 hours a day in the Air Force, then we could go to the beach every day if you wanted to, you know. Then 2 days later, I'm in the middle of an Air Force base in a war zone where I can't leave, I can't do anything, I can't call her. There were no cell phones. There were no computers, no nothing, no satellites. Here you are stuck 14,000 miles away from home, and you can't call your wife, you can't call your brother, you can't do anything. You're stuck, trapped. That's how I felt. It took me a while to overcome that. You know, I might want to scream and take off running, but where do you go, right? You're kind of stuck. You know. When I came back, I was 25, and I had been married at that point 4 years, and my daughter was 2 years old. I think it was a bigger adjustment for my daughter to get used to having a dad because she was only a year old when I left. But when I came back to Pittsburgh. My wife wanted to come back and live here in Pittsburgh, and I had several jobs lined up before I left Vietnam. So it really wasn't too big of an adjustment. I think it was 2 or 3 weeks, and I was pretty much into, a wife and a kid, and I had a job, and things were falling into a routine. I belong to an organization called the Vietnam Veterans Incorporated. I'm the treasurer, and we're based here in Allegheny County. We have a reunion every year at North Park, and we have about 300 people come out. And that's the one and only time we'll see a lot of these veterans. They come out and talk about it for a couple of days, you know, a couple of hours, have a beer or two, some food, and then they go back home and forget about it for another year. So, yeah, a lot of guys never really came back mentally. You know, they just came back physically, but they just didn't ever came back the way they were because of the combat. They're being over there so young, and it's all of a sudden they're going from home, getting to run around the cars and the girlfriends, and all of a sudden being shot at next day. You know, it's a heck of a deal to go through. I knew what my job would be before I got there. You know, I mean, I knew I was going to be fixing the airplane. That was my primary job. What kind of caught me off guard was before I went over, we were being told we weren't bombing Cambodia. We weren't bombing any other country other than Vietnam. And working on aircraft navigation systems and things, my second day or third day there, I was on the flight line. I'm setting up this navigation system on this bomber to fly west, which was Cambodia. And I said to the guys, how come we're setting up this navigation equipment to fly into Cambodia when we said we weren't bombing Cambodia? He said, we've been bombing Cambodia for years. You know, so that's what they don't tell you, you know. I think I learned a lot about life from that. Even though I went over there and I was 24 years old and I was still a young kid, I came back a different person. My wife even told me that. She said, you came back a little bit different, you know. She says, you're still a loving man, but she said, you're definitely changed. And she said, you got a little harder. A little bit like before, when someone would fall down or hurt themselves, I'd be rushing over and saying, are you okay? She says, you didn't do that anymore. You just kind of, you know, maybe walked over and said, get up or something like that. You know, car accidents and plane crashes and things, like it was the end of the world. It, to me, it was like almost a normal thing for a while. You know, it didn't seem to affect us, you know.